I have said in several previous programs that there is a big difference between courtship and marriage. And a lot of couples do not realize this until after they have said, "I do." And yet I think it's important for us to realize that many adjustments have to be made in marriage. And much has to be learned, and everyone seemingly has to go through this. There is no way to put an experienced head on young shoulders that just get married. But in courtship, one of the big differences is there is a freedom that is had by the single couple or the single person that is not retained once you get married. By this I mean, in courtship, if your feelings get hurt or if you disagree, well, then you can just simply go home and go to bed in your own bed, and you can just forget about it. And your parents, if you want to explain this to them, they're very understanding and very consoling and very sympathetic. But the point is, you don't have to deal with the problem. And there is, of course, a problem. The same thing happens with the boy or the girl. They can just go their merry way and forget about it. They don't have any responsibility because, you see, they're not married. And so this is a big difference between courtship and marriage. In courtship, you can sit down and discuss things in a pleasant way. But in marriage, sometimes you don't have the choice of free time. That is, you don't have a lot of time in marriage to make a decision. In courtship, you don't have to make a decision. In courtship, you can hide from the truth. Love can be blind because you can always go home. You can go home because mom and daddy's footing the bills. Mom and daddy's taking care of the financial burdens of running a home. Mom and daddy are facing all the working conditions of managing a home. In other words, mama usually keeps on washing the clothes, keeps on doing the dishes, keeps on cooking the food. She keeps on running the errands. The father keeps on bringing in the money, keeps on taking care of the yard. There's really no marriage responsibilities when you're single. And so love is, in a real sense, sort of blind. We can hide from the truth in courtship because we don't have to take things serious, because somebody else is taking care of us. But in marriage, everything changes. And suppose you can't run back home to mama, and mom and daddy's not going to mow the yard and not going to do your dishes and not going to cook your clothes and cook your food and wash your clothes. They're not going to do the things that normally they did to raise you up. So there's a big difference between courtship and marriage. Once you get married, you have to work things out. You just can't walk off and go home and a couple of days work it out over the phone. I mean, in marriage, it's not that simple anymore. You have to live with each other. In marriage, you have to deal with these flaws you can forget about, so to speak, ignore, overlook, when you're dating. With the changes that never take place in courtship, you can just sort of, well, ignore them, put up with them. Oh, they're not different, but they'll change one of these days. In courtship, it really doesn't make a whole lot of difference because you're only with them a couple of hours, maybe 4 or 5 at the most after you get off work and you go dating or on weekends. Well, you see, you're not with them very much. And so the things you don't like about each other, well, it'll change. They'll be different. But now when you get married, you're not with them a couple of hours. You're with them all the time. And those little annoyances that bothered you in courtship, you just sort of forgot about when you went back home. Now you got to live with it. Day in and day out. In this series I started, the girl had a problem with her husband eating so fast and pinging his teeth with the fork. Well, that really got to bothering her once she got married, because she was going to have to put up with that 3 times a day every meal. And that's different than just going out in the evening and maybe 1 meal. Now, when people get married, we got problems. Problems they never even considered dealing with when they were dating. They didn't have to. They didn't have to really please each other in every regard. They could run back home. They could forget about responsibilities because somebody else was taking care of all these things. They were shielded, so to speak, by their parents and by their home life the things that were provided then, they were shielding from having to cope with the reality of another person, another personality, and new responsibilities. And so the only solution that some young couples have as soon as they begin to live together after the wedding is, well, I'm going to hold my ground. I'm not going to give in. I'm going to have my word. I'm going to change the other person. I'm going to make the other person buckle under. And if I don't get my way, I have techniques. I use these at home and they work there. I'll use them now. Oh, brother, you better learn about the techniques of your mate to be before you make them your mate, period. And so some of the techniques are I'll pout, or I'll scream, or I'll throw things, or I'll argue, or I'll peck away at somebody. I'll annoy them, or I'll complain all the time, or I'll dig at them, or I'll be sarcastic to them, or I'll threaten them, or I'll cry, or I will rebel against them. And these are just some of the ways that we begin to seek to handle this matter of marriage difficulties, marriage disagreements, marriage problems. Now, that's not the way God plans for a couple to arrange their marriage relationship. And this is one of the things I think that many people fail to learn as Christians. Now, I'm specifically in this series talking about a Christian boy and a Christian girl who have a desire to please the Lord and to cultivate and produce the kind of marriage that God has designed from the beginning of time. Now, that's the kind of people that I am speaking to this morning, and no other kind, which, of course, would be the ideal makeup of an ideal marriage. I spoke last time that there is a specific role, a specific part that God wants each of the two people to play. There is a role for the husband and there is a role for the part. In Genesis 2:24, in speaking about marriage and speaking about uniting two equal personalities, God says, I want to make them into one flesh. Not a warring, divided flesh, not an unsympathetic, unconcerned flesh, but into one congenial, harmonious, beautiful flesh. I said before, I want to say it again, man is one part of the harmonious marriage puzzle. And leaving the hands of God, there was a piece missing from man himself. Not just from the marriage relationship, but from man, there is a piece of his makeup missing. And then God came along and made the woman to exactly fit that piece that was missing. The woman is the other piece of the puzzle. She makes man into completeness. She brings about oneness in man. So man and woman are to be so joined together that you have one union, one in harmony, one in personality. You have one person. And in this creation of the one flesh, God has decreed that in the union, the husband will be the designated leader, our designated steward, our designated overseer, not the designated tyrant, but the designated leader, the designated governor, so to speak. I know a lot of women don't like this, but let's face it, God said somebody has to be the leader of the union. And God has so created the man in such a way that man has a basic need to be the leader. Woman has a basic need to let him be the leader. Man is designed so he can be the leader. And woman is designed so she can help him be the leader. And that's the way God designed it. You may want to disagree with it. You may not like it. But that's the way God designed it. Everything fits together like it should. Did you notice, as you read the story of Genesis, that God, as far as the record goes now, only consulted Adam in the commandment of what he should not do? He said of Adam, "You shall not eat of the forbidden fruit of the tree of good and evil. You shall not." Well, how did Eve find out about that? As the designated leader, it was man's responsibility to tell his wife the will of God. She did know it, because we know when she was tempted by Satan, she told him. But God came to the man. What's this saying? Man is given leadership. Man is being given responsibility. And as we get along in this message, I want you to know that in the fall, man does not want responsibility. He wants to be, oftentimes I feel like, the boss. His right from God is to be the leader, to be responsible. Not to be the boss, but to be the responsible leader, the responsible overseer. Man does not want to be responsible. He just wants to be a boss. And that's not the way God designed it. But anyway, Adam was responsible for Eve knowing what God had said should not be touched. He was becoming, therefore, a spiritual leader of his wife. How few men take this responsibility. We have no right to go around shouting, "I'm the boss, I'm the boss," if you're not going to be a spiritual leader. If you're not even going to be responsible for the things for which God makes you responsible, you have no right to go around saying, "I'm the boss, I'm the boss." All right? And when Eve sinned, you and I, if we'd have been God, probably would have said, "I'm going to go talk to Eve. She's the one that sinned. She's the one that's responsible. She's the one disobeyed. I'm going to go get Eve." Well, that seems right, doesn't it? That seems just. I mean, Adam had not sinned yet. Eve was the one that first took the forbidden fruit. But did you notice that God didn't go to Eve? He went to Adam. Why? Because Adam was responsible for Eve. Why wasn't he watching after her? Why wasn't he overseeing her? Why wasn't he taking care of her? You say, "Well, he was somewhere else." I'm not sure, because it seems he was standing right there beside her when it happened. He permitted her to be tempted. He even allowed her to go ahead and do it. He didn't stop her. I don't think Adam was a real responsible person taking the role that God had given him. He was going to let her make a wrong decision without even trying to stop her. And so God came to Adam. And in a real sense, God blames Adam. Now, Adam tried to blame Eve. "Well, I didn't do it. Eve did it." But irregardless, God came to the man and said, "You are the spiritual leader. You're the one responsible. You're the one partly to blame for this. I put you as the leader, and you have a responsibility to her, which you failed to carry out." Now, in the ideal marriage, in the ideal partnership, the man is placed as the head or the responsible leader in that partnership. His job is to look after the physical and the mental and the spiritual welfare of his wife. That becomes his role. And from that role, he gets his greatest delight and his greatest enjoyment. She has a role to him, to be his cheerleader, to be his advisor. We talked about this last Sunday. She has a role to him to be his admirer. In return for that, he gives her something she needs. He looks after her mentally, spiritually, and physically. That's how he shows his care for her. That's how he shows his provision for her. But he shows a care about all of her, not just a part of her. And that becomes part of his responsibility, not just to her, but to God himself. When he gives you a wife, men, He gives you the responsibility. She is a jewel which you are to take care of physically, mentally, and spiritually. She is your responsibility. And I believe this with all my heart. On Judgment Day, God's going to judge you men for how you have taken care of your wife as her head. Not how you have ordered her around and bossed her around and told her what she can and can't do, but how you have taken care of her, provided for her, and looked after her physically, spiritually, and mentally. If you're going to have a happy marriage, a happy home, then the man must fulfill his role. And women, let him do it. Let him be the leader. And men, look to your wives for counsel, for admiration, and for encouragement. And women, give it to him. Cheer him on, encourage him on, that he might be a leader. Why? In leading, you're getting all the benefits. You're getting the interest from the investment you put in your husband. If he's doing what's right for everything you invest in your husband, he turns around and gives you interest. He gives you reward. He gives you profit. That's the way it's supposed to work. That's the way the union has been designed. You lift him up, he blesses you. You lift him up, he blesses you. You lift him up, he blesses you. So man must assume the role of responsibility. And for him to do that, the woman must be willing to be submissive to his need. You must help him be a leader. You must do everything in your power to make him a leader. If he becomes a leader, who's going to get the benefit? You are. You are on the receiving end of all your labor. To my opinion, the woman is in the greatest position of all in the marriage relationship. You're on the receiving end of everything. That's the way it's supposed to be. Now, in a marriage, God knows this, just like in everything else, you have to have someone in authority. Or you have pandemonium. Or you have open warfare. Continual competition. That is not what marriage is designed for. That will wreck a marriage. Now in the fall, when man and woman ate of the forbidden tree and they fell into sin, the whole makeup got all messed up. The original plan got messed up. Let me ask you this. Why do you think Satan attacked Eve first? Why not go ahead and take on Adam? Why go to Eve? Say, well, she's the weaker vessel. Well, not necessarily. Oh, physically, I guess a woman is weaker, but really, I don't think that's the reason that Satan went to Eve. I believe the reason he went to Eve was because Eve could identify with Satan. You say, how is that? Well, because Satan originally was Lucifer, the good angel. And he too had been put under God in submission, and God became the ruler, or the leader, or the head over all the angels, including Lucifer. And so Lucifer also, at one time, was in a spot of submission, just as Eve was to Adam. And so Satan whispered to Eve what undoubtedly he had whispered to himself when he tempted himself before he fell. Eve, this is an unfair arrangement. You deserve equal rule. If you can't get to be the ruler, if you can't get to be head of the man, at least you deserve equal rule with Adam. And so he, in a real sense, invited Eve to rebel against not only God, but against the authority of Adam. You don't go ask Adam if you can eat this fruit. You be your own boss. You be your own head. You be your own leader. You be liberated, not only from God, but get yourself liberated from your husband, Adam. Be like us gods. Run your own life. Don't let somebody tell you what to do. He didn't know what she had. It was so great. In other words, he was taking Eve out of the role that God had made for her and trying to convince her that's the role she would be the happiest in. And brethren, in the fall, she found out that was not the truth. And we've had marriage problems ever since. In marriage, God tries to put the two pieces of puzzle back in order and back in place where they belong. And did you know that after the fall, the matter of this being subject to the man became a basic issue with Eve? In Genesis 3:16, God said in judgment to the woman, "I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. In sorrow thou shalt bring forth thy children." And now notice this last part. He's talking about her sorrow now. "And in sorrow thy desire shall be," and I'm going to insert some words because I believe the original language teaches this, "in sorrow your desire shall be to rule over your husband, but his desire shall be to rule over thee." Do you notice that conflict being created by the fall? Eve would desire to take the role of leadership. She would desire to take the rule away from the man. And the man would desire not to let her have it. So you have immediately the conflict that you have today in most marriages. Who is going to be the boss? Who is going to have the last word? Who is going to have their way? And each puts their foot down and you have a deadlock. And eventually, sometimes, you end up in separation or divorce. And so still, the big issue boils down, as it did with Eve, who is going to be the ruler? I use the word leader. I like it better. I don't like the word ruler. I like the word leader because I believe it's more true to the purpose that God had in putting the man ahead of the woman. Now, I don't believe Adam was power hungry because God's decree before the fall was that man would be the head. And woman would be subject to the man. That was not Adam's idea, that was God's idea, which means that's the way God said He designed the marriage to work. Let's don't try to rework what God has created. So it was not Adam's hunger for power. And the fall did not change the basic need of a woman and a man in the marriage relationship. The parts of the puzzle have not changed. The needs have not changed. The psychological and mental needs of a man and a woman in regards to marriage have not changed. Now we keep trying to change them, but they really haven't changed. The woman is still created to be the helpmeet, to be the person that will meet the needs, to help the man, to be the leader God designed him to be. That's still the way God designs marriage to work. Now, God had a reason for this. And I mentioned a while ago that in my opinion, the woman by far gets the most out of the ideal marriage. Now, I think there's one misconception that we must quickly straighten out if we ever understand our roles as a man and a wife and a husband, or a husband and a wife, that a marriage is designed by God to fulfill some real basic needs of the man and of the woman. And if you have this in your mind, I want you to get rid of it. If your viewpoint is, and this is the world's viewpoint now, and it's no good for a marriage, here it is. I must have my way if I am to be happy. If that is your viewpoint, that will destroy your chances of a God-designed marriage. Your happiness, women, is going to come from making your man the spiritual, physical and mental leader of you and the family. Your happiness will come from shaping and molding him into the ideal husband of your universe. And man, your happiness is going to come from giving unto your wife the spiritual and physical and mental needs that she has, and that's where your happiness is going to come from. It's not going to come from always having your way, but it's going to come from making a jewel out of your wife. Bringing your wife the greatest amount of happiness is going to bring you the greatest amount of happiness. And women, turning your husband into the greatest leader is going to bring you the greatest amount of happiness. You are producing a leader, and he is producing a jewel. You get enjoyment out of making him a leader, and he gets enjoyment out of making you a jewel. The question of, I can't be happy unless I have my way, has no place in the marriage. The only question is, women, will it make him a better leader? And men, it is, will it make my wife a brighter jewel? You're building him and he's polishing you. That's the only question that we need to consider in a marriage. Not, I can't be happy if I don't have my way. You'll never be happy if you have your way. That's not the secret of happiness. That's not even the idea of love. Love is producing something for someone to bring them happiness. And husband, again, I say, you gain your happiness by making your wife into a bright jewel, and women, you make yourself happy by making your husband a great leader.